Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy weekend to join us for this two-hour show. Again, focused on markets and in the second hour on the metals sector with a couple more company updates where I try to feature some of the small companies that have some interesting programs going on and are waiting for some news to be released that could be some nice catalysts. That being said, the first hour is going to be focused again a bit more on broad markets, and I'm even going to get into a little bit of technical analysis because we do have a pretty strong following of technical traders, and I really want to simplify what some of the technicians I really like are focusing on. Please, everybody, keep those emails coming, fleck@kereport.com, and please let me know what you think of this, a bit of a renewed focus for the show. That being said, I am kicking off the show with Peter Buchvar. He writes the Book Report website, one that I visit every day. He is also the chief investment officer over at Bleakley Advisory Group. Peter, let's talk big picture right now in terms of what matters moving into next year. The election, for the most part, is behind us. I don't want to get into politics here. Let's just take the current numbers as we have them, which is a Biden presidency and still, for the most part, a split government. We also had some vaccine news that came out this week, caused some huge volatility at the start of the week. What matters in your eyes as we progress into next year?
Well, January 5th, we're going to have the runoff elections in Georgia on both Senate seats. The assumption is that the Republicans will win at least one of them, which would clinch the divided government for the next 2 years. But that is not in the books. So that'll be one key area of focus as we enter the new year. And then I think following the Pfizer news that we saw this week about the very positive results of their trials should be followed up by other positive results from Moderna and hopefully AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson in the months to come. So there is going to be optimism that we finally have effective antidotes to COVID and that should provide a lot more optimism into 2021. Now, when there'll be mass inoculation, that will remains to be seen, but the hope, of course, is that at least it'll begin in the first and second quarter and that the economy should rebound. Now, that doesn't mean that everything is going to be fine because there's going to be, you know, in terms of the market, because there's going to be an interest rate response, there could be a central bank response. And we know, generally speaking, we really have two stock markets. We have tech and then we have everything else. And tech, of course, has benefited this year from work from home. But if less people are working from home next year, maybe that means that other areas of the market start to trade better.
So, Peter, do you think it could all happen next year in terms of a vaccine coming out? I don't think we'll get to mass inoculation, best case scenario, even by next year. But would that be enough to provide some people with the confidence to go back out, start spending money on some of the things they used to spend money on, and even more importantly, start to open up more businesses?
I like to look at what is going on right now in China as sort of a window into what can happen next, in that not just China, but in Singapore and Japan and Taiwan and South Korea and Hong Kong, that they have contained this virus to a much greater extent than Europe, the U.S., and other parts of the world like South America. And you look at China, movie theaters are back to 90% of pre-COVID attendance levels. You have the restaurants that are full again. You have travel, which has risen sharply over the last couple of months, particularly during Golden Week, and malls are crowded again. So I think people will be surprised that once there is that confidence generated by that vaccine, while not everyone is going to get it, if enough people do get it and people see that it works, look at the fatigue we already see from COVID. I mean, people are just exhausted by this. So you give them a reason to actually then feel safe, then I think human nature is going to prove that a lot of our lives hopefully will go back to close to where it was pre-COVID. Again, it's going to take time, but I can be confident that if a lot of people get vaccinated in the first and second quarter of next year, that next summer, if there's a concert, those tickets are going to be sold out. And if there's a baseball game, those tickets are going to be sold out. And there's going to be large parts, and that restaurant, it's going to be hard to get a reservation because people are just exhausted under the current circumstances, and they're going to rush back to do the things that they did before. Now, obviously, some things won't change. You won't be maybe going to your office 5 days a week. Maybe it's just three or four, but you're still going to need space, and that, if anything, office space is going to have to be further spread out. So the irony is that maybe some employers will need even more space than they did before just to spread people out. So I don't want to extrapolate the last 8 months, which have been obviously very difficult, and assume that things are going to change forever. Again, some things may change, no question, but I think people will be surprised at how much they go back to the way they were pre-COVID. Again, assuming that we mass roll out these vaccines and they work.
Yeah, fair enough. Still a long and tumultuous road, still a long way, I think, from actually getting everything in order, but a lot of things have to go right. Oh, man, I hope they do, because I'd love to get back into a baseball stadium, watch some live sports rather than just watching it on TV. But let's say that this all progresses in a very positive fashion. People start to get more confident. This fatigue, it's clearly around, and I see what you mean. People are ready to get out and start doing things that we used to do. But when it comes to big picture monetary policy, does that shift aggressively in the opposite direction from where it's going right now, which is low to zero interest rates essentially forever?
Well, certainly it won't reverse aggressively because central banks, it's just not in their nature. You know, look at Janet Yellen, and she raised rates for the first time in 2015, and the recession ended in 2009. But at least as we get into early next year, it will stop, hopefully, the central bankers from pressing even further on the easing. You want to go where the puck is going, and the puck is going to a vaccine and a better economy next year. So, and that the central banks are going to be forced to sort of call a timeout on their policies and realizing that the only reason why at least the Fed has lowered rates to zero and ramped up QE, and you know, Bank of Canada cutting rates and ramping up QE, and Reserve Bank of Australia and the Bank of England, and well, they did that because of COVID. Well, if COVID all of a sudden is the beginning of the end, it starts going away next year, well, how do you substantiate keeping policy pedal to the metal the way that it is? So I think that they're going to have no choice but to start having conversations about reversing it and at some point implementing it.
That would be quite the change. But again, a lot of stuff has to go right to get to that level. You mentioned inflation there. What are the odds, do you think, of inflation perking up to a certain degree that even the Fed or the ECB says, oh, wow, we finally have the inflation that we want that is running even over our targets?
Well, I think the stage has already been set. And we're seeing that in certain areas of the economy. We're beginning to see it in commodity prices. We're seeing it in transportation costs that are rising double digits. We saw it in the spring with food prices, that the supply constraints followed by a strong increase in demand led to a spike in prices. You obviously have massive fiscal spending that is keeping demand more elevated than would be otherwise, and then monetized by central banks. So you have all the tinder for higher inflation, and then now all you need is the workable vaccine, and if I'm right that you're going to get a bigger rush in demand than expected, then the supply side on goods and services I don't think is going to be able to meet it. I mean, you can only imagine that if people start getting vaccinated in the first quarter, second quarter, what the demand for hotel rooms this summer is going to be, and getting on planes. And again, those concert tickets, you can probably name your price and people will pay just to be able to get to a concert. So I think that the vaccine sort of clinches an inflationary environment next year. And again, you can be sure, as I said, central banks will be way overstaying their welcome with their easing. that'll certainly lend more fire to that potential inflationary outcome, which means that longer-term rates will head higher, and central banks, again, will be forced to respond to that, I believe.
So when you take a step back and look at all the central banks in the world, or at least the major ones, where do you rank the easy nature that they are at right now? Do you have a bit of a pecking order where you say this one is doing more than others, this one is being a little bit more conservative, or is it right now just a broad brush saying they're all easy?
Well, in their own way, they're all tied to the metal. There's no question. I mean, what amazes me is that they're all doing the same thing, just in different degrees, and each one thinks that they're going to have some sort of different outcome. I mean, there's no self retrospection whatsoever about what they're doing and whether it works or not. It's just this delusional knee jerk that we just need to ease to the greatest extent, and somehow that's going to make things better. But they're fighting a disease that they don't have the medicine for. And the problem is that it gets them so in deep that you can only imagine what's going to happen to markets when they reverse this. I mean, that's the thing, is that 2020 was a great example of the stock market able to do well in the midst of a pandemic and a sharp economic decline. Next year, you can see an improvement in the economy and better health and lifestyles, but a challenged market because of what it means, again, for monetary policy and rates.
What does it mean for currencies then? Do you see the U.S. dollar? Where do you see the U.S. dollar going? Let's start there.
Well, if I'm right on inflation, that typically is negative for a currency. And if you continue to see massive U.S. budget deficits, that will also be dollar negative as well. So I think that the challenges to the dollar remain and will likely intensify in the next 2 years, particularly, again, if I'm right on inflation. And these budget deficits just can't be controlled.
But aren't those challenges the same in, say, Europe? If inflation picks up, they're also extremely easy with their monetary policy.
For sure. And I'm not saying that any other currency is really that good, but compared to the dollar, I mean, it's so interesting when you look at the euro and you see it at 118 here. For a while, it traded 105, 115, and never was able to break below a dollar. And in the face of negative interest rates, let alone zero, QE, which is greater there than it is here, still very sclerotic type economies throughout the region, and the euro never was able to break down. And I think that says a lot about the troubles and the flaws of the U.S. dollar. Also, of course, there's a current account surplus in Europe, which also helps the euro relative to the dollar, because we have these massive deficits and we're the largest debtor nation in the world, that it says that the dollar is inherently flawed, and that while some of these other currencies are really not that much better, all they have to be is a little better on the margin, and they will go up more than they will go up against the dollar. You look at Japan. I mean, the Bank of Japan has literally been lighting the yen on fire for years now. But look how well the yen trades. It says a lot about the flaws of the U.S. dollar. And now, really, the dollar's only rallied against the really troubled currencies like the Argentinian peso, the Turkish lira. But look at Asian currencies have traded great against the U.S. dollar because, like I said, they've been much better off in this pandemic and dealing with the spread. And that means that their economies contracted less and they've rebounded quicker.
Okay, so really the focus is going to continue to be on COVID news, more focused around a vaccine and if these vaccines, when they even are available to the public. Let's talk about some of the other sectors then. How about the metal sector? Starting off with base metals. A lot of commentary around base metals being maybe an infrastructure bill would come. Now post-U.S. election, with the divided nature of that election, seems like it might be a bit harder to get a big infrastructure bill through, but we still see things like copper just continuing to grind higher almost day after day. Where do you stand on your outlook for base metals?
Still positive. I mean, I think that the vaccine is really the ultimate stimulus package. And even aluminum yesterday hit its highest level since early 2019. I think that copper has some great supply-demand imbalances. The demand side helped by this whole shift to renewables, electric batteries, that there's a secular demand side story to copper. At the same time, there's been a dearth of investment over the last couple of years that has dramatically limited the supply side. Really, when you look at commodities generally, it's really been crude oil has really been the last one to rally. Industrial metals have rallied. Obviously, gold and silver has rallied a lot this year. The grains have now rallied. Soybeans at a multi-year high. Corn above $4. Wheat above $6. And it's really been crude oil. Even natural gas above $3. And I do think that the bullish case for crude oil is taking place now with this vaccine in 2021. That you've had this crimp in on the supply side. You've had a sharp decline, at least in the U.S., on shale production, which we may never see again, the 2019 production levels. And once you get crude oil going, then you have a commodity bull market that potentially can gain some legs, again, helped by life getting back to more normalcy in the latter part of next year.
So then how do precious metals react? Because there's a lot of push and pull here. Obviously, on the positive side, a weaker currency, more inflation, that can all very much help the metals or the precious metals. But if you remove this pandemic uncertainty, that's obviously put a buy under them. So that could be pressure to the downside. What's most important for precious metals?
Well, I never like to look at gold as a safety play. I look at gold and I square it up against where the dollar is going and other fiat currencies and where real rates are going and block out everything else. And if I'm right that the economy bounces back sharply next year, at least the latter half because of the vaccine, well, then you're going to see higher inflation, which means further negative real rates because the Fed is just going to sit there and twiddle their thumbs while this happens. And also, you're going to see higher inflation, which would mean a weaker currency. And while the budget deficit may shrink because the economy picks up, all the spending that we're doing, the enormous amount of spending we're doing, will keep budget deficits as a percent of GDP still very high, which would also be dollar negative. So I think actual vaccine is probably is bullish for the metals, again, because of the inflation it's going to create and the deeper real negative interest rates we're going to see as a result.
All right. Very interesting. Final comment. You and I really have not talked about this sector, but the clean energy sector. A couple standouts have been solar ETFs, clean energy ETFs. They have screamed higher. We do have a Democrat as president in the U.S. Does that back up some of these moves that we've seen in clean energy?
Yes, but if we have a divided Congress, then there's only so much that is going to end up happening. Now, of course, from an executive order standpoint and a regulatory standpoint, I'm sure the Democrats are going to do what they can to further boost the cleaner energy side and crimp the fossil fuel side. That is no question going to be happening, and they're going to make life miserable for those in the fossil fuel business. So it's really just on the solar side or wind and whatever. It's more of a what they'll be able to do, again, on the executive side, because it's unlikely they're going to get what they want on the congressional side.
All right, Peter, we're going to wrap it up there. Great spending these first two segments with you. Again, Peter is the Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Advisory Group, also the editor of the Book Report. You can find his website, www.bookreport.com. Book is spelt with two O's and C-K. Peter, great chatting with you, buddy. I will be chatting with you again in probably about another week, so have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Corey. You too. Always fun to do.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.